12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos, by Jordan Peterson, foreword by Norman Doidridge. Key takeaways, summary, and analysis included, written and narrated by Improvement Audio. Introduction. Throughout the years, former Harvard and current University of Toronto professor and clinical therapist Dr. Jordan B. Peterson has created what he accepts to be a conclusive arrangement of standards for living a fruitful and satisfying life. From an initial list of 40 rules, Peterson has worked to condense them into a thoroughly considered, reasonable rundown of 12 rules that he shares in this book. He has a depth of refreshing honesty. He believes firmly in telling the truth, human order, and sexual health. He trusts that pain is an unavoidable part of life and that individuals include it inside themselves to make an order out of chaos. It's likewise important this is a forceful, in-your-face sort of self-help book, one which he bundles and displays as the convergence of old intelligence and logical research. A significant part of the old insight appears to originate from religious sacred writing, while the logical research fills in as an approach to reinforce the convictions the writer holds precious to him. In any case, whether you think yourself religious, unreligious, or someplace in the middle, this is an intense book that can enable you to build a higher feeling of self-restraint and confidence. This book is a groundbreaking effect of continually coming clean, regardless of what could happen. This audio captures the key takeaways found in the original book. All fluff and unnecessary information has been removed to save you hours of time. If you've already read the original, this audio will help you cement the most important lessons. If you haven't, don't worry. Here you'll find all the practical information that you can apply. However, we do encourage you to purchase the original as well for a more comprehensive understanding of the subject. Foreword. We require rules. We need them for our own benefit. That doesn't mean we like them. That doesn't mean we look forward to them. In any case, without standards, we're left to our own judgment, which never leads to anything great. Jordan Peterson took the time and made methods easy to appreciate. The idea was to be able to talk to your brain. He wanted you to understand the thoughts behind the process. He regularly finished his discussion with his patients with a hug or a handshake. He has the excitement that made the profound subjects feel reasonable. Casual discussion prompts deeper discussion. He was reasonable. Regardless of what the circumstance was, he comforted individuals and pulled the information out of their psyche. He's fascinating and fair while being mindful of the way others think. Maps of Meanings was started by a kid experiencing childhood in the time of the Cold War. The thought behind this book is that you should set your home first and afterward develop your route into the world. The straightforward methodology can't always work. It's a perplexing world in which we live. These two books flow nicely into each other. Individuals detest rules. The manner in which Peterson gives them, his permanent magnetism, makes everybody willing to tune in. There was a need for these rules. Prejudice of different people to groups and their perspectives will prompt ill will and is fundamentally off base. You must have an ethical compass. Without it, you have confusion. Recent college grads have been assaulted with this twist in how they adjust to the world around them. You should assume liability for your own life. There's no other way around it. These standards expect you to make a move in your own life and be in charge of your activities. Not all things are a right. If you need your rights, then you can expect to have obligations that make that right possible. This book began because it appeared that everybody needed to know the insider facts of life. Nevertheless, the creator took the essentials that got the most significant hits off the site called Quora and extended them. It's something other than the response to questions or somebody disclosing how to live. It's a promise to take in and develop in a way that's enlightening. The challenge is comprehending what's in store. It's the social standards and previously established inclinations. It's helpful and natural. Chaos is something that you don't hope to occur. It's like discovering your sweetheart is untrue. It's like being hit with a remarkable, extraordinary circumstance out of the blue. The challenge is white. Bedlam is dark. This is the challenge of both. Rather than hunting down bliss, maybe hunting down parity is the appropriate response. This book is an essential manual to help you to live well. It's work originating from the examination into who you are. Maybe a balancing out of human instinct will occur if everybody could reach these standards. It's an esteem framework that considers you responsible for you, and just you. We can't bear the cost of hate or war. Rule 1. Stand up straight with your shoulders back. Creatures in the wild battle for an area. They need to be someplace that has food, a place to live, and simple access to water. They'll discover this land and secure it by any conceivable means. Every once in a while, it even costs them their lives. Now, both sides, the protector and the aggressor, have a tendency to get injured. Strife and territory. Indeed, even as they battle, they endeavor to hold damage down as much as possible. When a territory is set up, the creature will remember it. They'll map out where everything is in relation to their home. If their area is compromised, they may retreat to a shelter that they know to be safe. The neurochemistry of annihilation and triumph. Creatures utilize numerous approaches to make themselves look greater and more grounded, to threaten their adversary. The serotonin levels are what make them feel like a victor. The way that winning feels will encourage them to keep going. The way they feel when they lose is another hormonal reaction. The way that we react all depends on how the hormones react. The rule of unequal distribution. This is a rule that echoes all throughout each species, even people. The rich live to finish everything. They improve the situation. They're the victor. They stroll with their head held high. The ones with less tend to hold their head down and even recoil far away from those in control. Every one of the girls. The females tend to go straight for the victors, the more grounded, the ones with more territory. The chain of importance implies that the male who is more grounded gets the females. It implies that the species will survive due to the male's ability to provide. The nature of nature. Development includes the creature developing more features. Explore a skeleton. You'll see the basics appear to be identical. The fins of whales, the wings of a bat, and even the hands of people all carbon copy at the skeletal level. Nature does the choosing. It's nature that chooses predominance. And that's the manner in which it has dependably been and dependably will be. Best and base. As a human, your status says everything in regards to your identity. The ones at the bottom are easy to recognize. You can see certain features. They're imprudent, prepared to do anything, tend to settle on poor decisions, will probably yield to momentary delight. They're independent and don't confide in anyone because no one has demonstrated that they can be trusted. They have fewer mating chances. They have fewer assets. They live shorter lives and kick the bucket in foolish ways. While the best tend to live better, they have a determination of mates. They know how to use the cash they need to better themselves. They live more and tend to be more beneficial. Your status in life controls more than most imagine it does. Breakdown. We require schedules. You need to take a look at a kid to know how evident this is. A routine can have a great effect on melancholy and tension. Having an anticipated rest timetable and having breakfast can help colossally in this. Gloom, uneasiness, and enslavement make them think in like manner. The cerebrum exists as a circle and will begin to rehash the conduct to find comfort. It's a winding impact that conveys you down to the bottom, where you can't receive in return. Your brain persuades you that you can't accomplish something, and it pulls back into what it knows will give comfort. Ascending. Individuals who are harassed are almost always the ones that won't defend themselves. They consider themselves unfit. At the point when they do, it's groundbreaking. They start to trust that they can do anything. They begin to have the capacity to hold their head high. To stand up straight with your shoulders back is to acknowledge the horrible duty of existence with your eyes completely open. It implies choosing to change the mayhem into something you can do and even improve. It resembles surrendering youth and turning into a grown-up. The time has come to focus on your stance with the goal that you can make the improvements that will lead your life into what you want. It's your privilege as much as it is anyone else's. Rule 2. Treat yourself like someone you're responsible for helping. Numerous individuals can be given a similar pill, advised to take it all the time with expectations that they'll show signs of improvement. Half of them won't fill the prescription, and the other half may, however, they won't take them consistently, overlook or quit taking them altogether. Doctors and drug specialists tend to accuse the patients of such misguided decisions. However, many accuse the expert. When the pill doesn't work, they blame the doctor. Why? It's easier to blame someone else than it is to admit that you are at fault. The oldest story and the nature of the world. Genesis tells how God made the universe, using his voice, including Adam and Eve. Abstract presence can be something more like a work of fiction than anything logical, like the dramatization of wisdom, life, demise, love, and torment. The domain, not of matter, yet of what matters. Turmoil is chaotic and boundless. Order is the place everything is sure and where we have control. It's the place, position, and experience of everything brought together. When something is startling and unwanted, it's mayhem. Our brains react in a split second to chaos, like a quick reaction. The faster the result, the more intuitive. Order and disorder. Personality, female and male. Disorder and order are the two most essential components of experience. Mayhem and application are things like identity, yet they're not comprehended as items. We also observe non-living as animated, and with reason. Things that have been around for quite a long time are essentials. They're parts of the condition that we adjusted to. Disorder is seen as female since it's the start. It's because of the procedure of birth. Women are pickier, particularly with regards to sexual practices. Most men don't fit the female gauges. That could be the reason why there are significantly more females than males. The Garden of Eden. The account of Adam and Eve demonstrates that the woman settles on a decision, then drives the man to follow her lead, since the very beginning of time. It proves that mayhem is unavoidable and is going to occur. The naked ape. The thing we learn in Genesis is merely the beginning. This capacity to know right from wrong, order from mayhem, and that mindfulness is a human quality. It implies we need to work to discover strength. It means nothing comes easy. It means that life is a struggle and brimming with anguish. Great and evil. What separates us from the animals is that we know the difference between good and bad. We know that we can dispense agony, and we know how to keep from doing so. There's a system monitoring our activities and staying alert. It's a faculty that only we have. Creatures kill since they're ravenous. However, we realize that murder isn't right. We understand what it takes to be insidious and to be great. The spark of the divine. We were made in the perfect image. We have the obligation of making the right decision, but it isn't our duty or our responsibility to be responsible for others. Only you can offer importance to your life. The decisions you make decide how you feel about what you have in your life. It will take control and trustworthiness on your part. When you do find that you've ventured off track from your objective, realign yourself, and afterward, you'll discover pride. You merit regard. As we all merit regard, it isn't about what makes you glad. It's about what's beneficial for you. Nobody else can tell you what will make you happy. And nobody can tell you whether something is helpful for you since it makes you glad. It's your duty. Own up to it. Deal with yourself. And you'll see how everything else falls into place. You are in charge of you. Rule 3. Make friends with people who want the best for you. In the cold of the Arctic, there isn't much. It's an unsafe place to live. The sun scarcely shines. Creatures could freeze in hours. House pets could, without much of a stretch, bite the dust if let out for a brief period. Drunks leaving the bar fall asleep in the snow and never wake up. In this sort of devastation, the main thing that could keep you alive is your companions. My friend Chris and his cousin. Chris and Ed were both intelligent. Chris was angry. He was troubled with his father. Ed was a decent child. He was, by all accounts, on the correct path until the point that you meet his companions. They discovered pot, and for quite a long time we would cruise down the streets nearby. It was the way we took a break. High school wasteland. On the rare occurrence that we weren't out cruising, we were at a party. There was nothing good at these parties. It was a wellspring of tanked idiocy where nothing happened. Everybody realized that they'd leave the neighborhood. Everyone would either head off to college or to work. The town had money. The occupations were abundant and lucrative, yet everybody went away. Some different friends? Same business as usual. When I started making friends that wanted to better themselves, it made me better. I drove myself to achieve more. I accomplished more. When I'd get together with friends from my past, I anticipated that they would have bettered themselves, yet they hadn't. They had similar friends and were carrying on with a similar life, yet they went nowhere. Protecting the cursed. At times, we make companions simply because we want to save them. In some cases, we pick awful friends since we want to assist them with changing their life. This can be perilous. We can be brought down because we're around them. We can begin to bring down our standards. Now and again, we need to understand that their hopelessness is caused by their refusal to move towards positive changes. As brutal as it sounds, it might be that they pick the life they live. A reciprocal arrangement. The companions that you should make are companions that will develop you. They will be there for you, with you, and reveal to you when you're tricking yourself. They need to develop you and to drive you to be the best individual that you can be. Use your judgment regardless of anything else. Pick your companions carefully. Try not to accept somebody as a friend that you wouldn't be willing to let your sister or brother pick as a companion. Listen to your instincts. Surround yourself with people that will build you up. Rule 4. Compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not to who someone else is today. Regardless of your identity and how great you are at something, there's somebody who might not like you. You can't compare yourself to anyone else. A clinician has suggested positive deception, which means that suggestions can influence the way that you think. If you think about things in a positive light, then you'll make better choices. If you compare yourself with someone else, then you're going to set yourself up for disappointment. Look at who you were yesterday and aim to be better today. Each day, be better and do better. Numerous good games. In life, there are plenty of diversions. Some we're better at, well, at other hobbies, we aren't the best. You're either active or you bomb. There isn't a middle ground. There are many great diversions, and you don't generally end up doing only one. You shouldn't focus on what you can't do well. You should focus on what you can do. Then practice what you aren't good at and find your balance. Exaggerating what we don't have and underestimating what we do is a trap. It keeps us from being who we really are. The direction of our eyes, or take stock. Our eyes are continually looking at things. We're continuously moving from A to B. We're regularly evolving. We're bettering ourselves. We're endeavoring to improve our future and moving from our past. Begin with a little change. Repair a relationship. Attempt to improve a little every day. Strive for now to be better than yesterday. Tomorrow ought to be superior to today. What you need and what you see. There was a test. A teacher played a video of a basketball game. The students were advised to check how frequently the ball was caught. Most of the students answered the question correctly. Then, when they thought they were done, they were asked about the gorilla. They all had no idea the gorilla was there. They thought it was a joke. When the video was played back, and they weren't concentrated on the ball, they saw the gorilla. You need to take stock. You need to make sense of your goal and direction. You need to choose how to best move towards that without losing concentration on what you're doing now. The Old Testament God and the New Testament God. In the Old Testament, God appeared to care little about what individuals thought. He rebuffed remorselessly, he was fearful, he was not to be upset. In the New Testament, God was a divine force of affection. He was continually lenient. He seems to have changed entirely. We may find it hard to trust that terrible things can occur on the planet when it's said to be kept running by a cherishing God. Maybe that's the reason such a large number of people trust that if something terrible occurs, it will be counteracted by something great happening. Focus. Stop. Check out your work area. Check out your home. What are you able to fix right now? What would you be able to improve? Is your intensity making a difference? Quit concentrating on the negative and being burdened by what you can't fix. Begin by settling what is directly in front of you. Fix something that will make tomorrow less demanding. Do that paperwork that you've been putting off. Change your state of mind about what you need to do. Change what you can. Release the rest. Rule 5. Don't let your children do anything that makes you dislike them. Your youngsters will do what you let them do. On the off chance that you give the time and the consideration that they need to feel cherished and regarded, you will be rewarded with all-around pleasant kids. It requires both investment and devotion to give them what they need to flourish. Everyone hates math. Things that happen every day make up our lives. Battling with kids can be something continually upsetting and takes time that we could use to do more profitable things. Some say the issue is the parent. However, it isn't just a one-sided issue. It could be the issue of the day for our general public. The ignoble savage. On the off chance that you leave your kids unattended, regardless of the reason why, they will be moved by their own devices. It, as a rule, makes them end up feeling like they're on their own. They tend to do things that you may not allow them to do otherwise. It may make them distance themselves from you. Consider your most loved pet, your puppy. If you ignore him, he'll become uncivil. He'll carry on, he'll destroy things. You won't care for him, and he won't feel like he matters. Parent or companion. Guardians should stress over their children being angry with them, since they must discipline them. It's intended to demonstrate that they must have boundaries so that they can reach their goals. It's from this safe place that they can bloom from their own choices. To give them limits instructs them to think about what they're doing. As they make choices, they'll have to ignore some. This is how you teach them to choose right from wrong. To not give them this order is to make them rebellious. It tells them that they have no limits, and we as a whole have limits. Brutality is simple. It's the default. Peace is hard. Peace requires effort. Here's the thing about control. It's hard. Yet you are rewarded with an honest relationship with your child. Your child figures out how to respect your limits and learns his own. He realizes what he can and can't get by with. He turns into a well-rounded grown-up. Control and punish. don't create punishments that you can't follow through on. Your child will learn that your consequences mean nothing. They'll learn that you can't punish them, and this will lead them to do whatever they want. They'll not learn to respect you, themselves, or their surroundings. Least necessary force. Sometimes kids break the rules. They either ignore them or have decided to try things on their own, and you will have to step in. Try not to expect that your youngsters will act like grown-ups. They're not grown-ups. They lose track of what the overall goal is. Adjust as required, yet do so as little as you must. Be encouraging. Allow them to face the consequences of their actions as much as possible. A rundown of standards. 1. Limit the rules. 2. Use the least power needed. 3. Parents should come in sets. 4. Parents ought to comprehend their own imperfections. 5. Parents are intermediaries for this present reality. The great tyke and the mindful parent. Your activities as a parent characterize your kid. If your youngster has something you don't like about them, you can change it. Have real conversations with your child and realize your shortcomings. Talk to your other half and find a way to be reasonable when it comes to guiding your child. Rule 6. Set your house in perfect order before you criticize the world. You have to face the fact that the world is terrible. From the standpoint of a mass shooter, everyone is evil and going to die anyway, so why not kill everyone? Even Hitler had the mentality to kill everyone. Also, if you believe in God, you might realize that you don't understand why there's so much evil in the world. Vengeance or transformation? Whether you believe in God or decide that fate plays a role, you have to wonder why the world is filled with so much suffering and cruelty. Mass murderers believe that they're doing the world a favor. They think that they're justified or even getting revenge. They often hate everyone, including themselves. Things fall apart. We humans have simple basics. Build a home, supply food, live. That's what we do. We also need to prepare for when bad things happen. We prepare for natural disasters. It's the preparation that decides how bad a natural disaster is. If you aren't prepared, then you have no one to blame but yourself. Clean up your life. Stop doing what you know to be wrong. Start by changing your habits that are detrimental to your health, happiness, and well-being. Use your standards to make your judgments and then change your behavior. Listen to the wisdom of those around you. Don't blame others. If you put your heart into it, you will succeed. When you start to pay attention to what's going wrong in your own life, you can begin to make it better. That will trickle down to your children, your neighborhood, and the world. Small changes in your life can lead to significant changes. Rule 7. Pursue what's meaningful, not what's expected. When you understand that your life is brief, that soon you'll be only a memory, it makes you want to live the best life that you can. It makes you need to make the most of life's delights without bounds. That doesn't achieve anything. This prompts struggle. It inspires more hopelessness. It doesn't do anything besides hurt us. A delay of gratification. Something better could come later on if we surrender something today. Work is a deferred delight. When you work hard for something, you tend to value it more. The longer we plan for it and work towards a goal, the more we cherish the reward, because we earned it. This builds us as an individual and a community. Passing, toil, and evil. We need to surrender childish want and immediate gratification. The world is against you. There's no chance to get around it. The evil on the planet is after you. Additionally, we need to work. When we see the future, we can get ready for it. When you wind up mindful of yourself and your helplessness, you comprehend being frightened, angry, and soothing. You understand what it feels like to be severed. You additionally see how you can make others feel like that. If you focus on that, then that is what you will become. Detestable. Confronted. Satan exemplifies the refusal to forfeit. It is this evil that declines to recognize. Surrendering to sacrifice prompts something better later on, not far off. It's tied in with getting what you need now. It's about not having any desire to sit tight for what you feel is owed to you. Christianity and its problems. Christianity raises the spirit. It urges individuals to reach to be better. It pushes individuals to achieve and to improve the situation. It discloses to us that even the humble has esteem and rights. It offers some incentive to all human life. It isn't flawless by any means. It makes individuals feel like they need to satisfy an impossible standard. However, the underlying point is that everything good is worth the wait. Then, when we'll work towards that, we'll learn patience and to appreciate what we have. Uncertainty. Past mere nihilism. We test ourselves. We endeavor to hold the best of ourselves. A thought makes us alive. It creates us where we need to be. An idea propels us. It encourages us to create our identity. It chooses for us between being great and being terrible. Enduring is genuine. Endurance is the thing that drives the world. The positive qualities on the planet are the thing that prevents other terrible things from occurring. Which means aim higher. Aim higher. Focus. Fix what you can. Try not to be egotistical. End up mindful of your imperfections and shortcomings. You will sin. Everybody makes mistakes. It's continually choosing great over awful. It's always attempting to be a better person, even if you're tempted to do otherwise. If you're demonstrating positivity appropriately, your life will be better over the long haul. It's the thing that will separate your life. It's tied in with putting something aside for a rainy day. It's tied in with getting ready for whatever could happen. It's tied in with living for the future and not endeavoring to surrender to right now, regardless of how enticing it might be. Rule 8. Tell the truth. Or at any rate, don't lie. When you don't come clean, you don't move toward becoming you. You turn into a shell of the genuine individual or a phony. By not coming clean, you open yourself up to awkward circumstances, and you tell individuals that they can't confide in you. You're dishonest, and everybody knows it. A lot of times, coming clean is less demanding. It's uncomplicated. Sometimes it's difficult. Yet, it will prompt better results. Control the world. You are controlling reality with your view of thought and activity. The result is predefined and unforeseen. It's concluding that this is what is better for the present moment. It isn't taking a guess at the future consequences, or, on the other hand, it is twisting what could be, and in this, making a world that does not exist. The truth, instead. How about we cut it down to this? If you lie, things will fall apart. In the long run, things will become unraveled, and you'll feel like a lesser person. You will be brimming with self-uncertainty, dissatisfaction, and misery. The others around you won't confide in you and won't care for you. If you need a full and sound life, then you must be straightforward and clear. If all else fails, come clean. Be honest. Try not to lie. Rule 9. Assume that the person you're listening to might know something that you don't. People will like you more if you're actually listening to them. You get guidance when somebody accepts that they're smarter than you and know how you ought to do everything. Psychotherapy, then, is honest-to-goodness discussion. It involves tuning in and then talking, and afterward, tuning into the next individual talking. It's a discussion. It's a way to get the ball rolling quite quickly. Make sense of it for yourself. Individuals need to think. They have to process. If we contribute our point of view with our recommendation, it changes what they believe. It reveals to them what to think. It makes it harder for them to make sense of things for themselves. Believing is tuning in to yourself, and that is uncommon. You take in everybody's sentiments and you choose what you believe. However, your considerations have just been undermined. If you will go to bat for what you believe in, you need to choose what you have confidence in, which may not be something that you can manage without being able to think for yourself. A listening person. Whenever you let somebody talk without interfering, they will reveal to you their thoughts. They can travel through thoughts without being pushed or influenced. In any case, if you listen to somebody and afterward let them see how you react, you give them the opportunity to feel genuine. You discover more about that individual and yourself simultaneously. You must be there for other individuals, yet you must be straightforward with them as well. You never know how much you will learn when you slow down and actually listen to someone. By what means should you listen? You should let them talk, then recap what they're saying back to them, then allow them to correct you. Then offer an updated recap. Why? To begin with, it will give you a full comprehension of what they are saying. You may even have the capacity to see an alternative perspective. Second, it forces you to recollect the discussion and what it involved. It turns into a memory, a more grounded memory. Third, you discover an incentive in what the individual is stating. You can clear up your position, and you can illuminate your contention. Primate dominance, hierarchy maneuvers, and the mind. Not all talking is contemplation. Not all listening is change. When you stop and listen, you start to hear what the individual is saying, and you can identify with them. The discussion winds up being charming. If you're always contemplating what you will say next, you're not listening. You discover that the discussion is going nowhere, and it begins bouncing around. Nothing profitable comes from this. It's anything but a genuine conversation. Real listening implies that every individual comprehends what their perspective is, and the discussion results in both speakers beginning to appreciate it and gain from it. You aren't attempting to beat them. You're not trying to transform them. It's a trade of thoughts that prompts the learning process. You are conversing with your audience members, not at them. Discussions in transit. You don't know everything. You are not great. You have not been everywhere. There might be examples that you can share about a given situation. However, you can't know everything there is to know about everything. Set aside your opportunity to speak because you may get the hang of something important to you and the individual that you're listening to. Rule 10. Be precise in your speech. PCs resemble a container to us, a power source that's bolstered by a power lattice, a little piece of our life that will be disposed of after we have no more use for it. Like a leaf without a tree, your computer can be the equivalent, disintegrating from our lives in a few little years. Most things we possess are that way. Apparatuses, obstacles, and extension into the world. Most things we see are the helpful things to us. The world to us is something we explore and use, and we see individuals as those we have to converse with and participate with. The articles we see are not just there. They exist in a complex, multidimensional relationship with one another. We act like those in fictional books and shows, hoping to confront disaster and win. The world is simple only when it behaves. Things change and move in reality, isolating the important things from the little things. We're going to move towards goals that are important to us. We're going to make room for the things in our life that we want in our life. This is true of people as well. If you value something, then you'll make a spot for it in your world. If you don't value it, then it will fade away. You and I are simple only when the world behaves. The past isn't generally what it was, regardless of whether it has just been. The present is tumult and change. Things change that seem to cause us to reevaluate our identity and what we need to be. We don't know our status. Everything is so nitty-gritty and changing that we may not ever be able to acknowledge or understand it. When something turns out badly, everything turns out more troublesome. Things change, and it winds up hard to fix and improve on it. What do we see when we don't know what we're looking at? The truth of the matter is that we need to manage things. We can't act like we don't see them. They'll just become more prominent. There comes a time when we need to confront things head on and then accept it as it happens. It might appear to be a battle to get to the root of the issue. However, once we do, we'll be rewarded with the type of peace that comes with the ability to see things for what they really are. The construction of soul and world. The world is sorted out. The spirit is sorted out. Once in a while, we require clarity of thought to find the solution. We need to ask ourselves, is it justified, despite all the trouble? Begin with the questions, am I despondent? Then go from there to discover why you're troubled and how to cure the problem inside yourself. Fix the issue. Don't overlook it. Wheat from chaff. Now and again, something appalling isn't as awful as we imagine. Imagination can change our perceptions of something and cause it to seem harder to stand up to. If you can't stand up to the unforeseen, things can wind up unimaginable and disorganized. If you slow down and take careful consideration, you can streamline them as opposed to abandoning them. You need to make sense of where you are, the significance it has in your life, and what